I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about tragedies, about the damage done to young people who are subjected to bullying, and about the damage done when no one in authority hears their cries for help. We'll discuss the wounds left in families and communities touched by bullying. My guest will be Alex Lambert, a Butler University visiting professor and the producer and director of Mentor, a film about the consequences of bullying in an Ohio town, and Marilyn Leatherman, an anti-bullying trainer and longtime Indiana school administrator. To join the conversation, call 866-476-3881, email nolimits at WFYI.org, Facebook is No Limits WFYI, Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about bullying. The hook for the show really is the presentation next week, Tuesday evening, in fact, of the film Mentor, which is a movie about the consequences of bullying in an Ohio town. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits at WFYI.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are the producer and director of the film Mentor, who's also a Butler University visiting professor, Alex Lambert, and longtime educator and anti-bullying trainer, Marilyn Leatherman. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you both here. Alex, I'm going to start with you because I have seen your film, as I told you before we went on the air. And when I sort of stumbled it, I wanted to say I enjoyed it, and that's not really the right word because I can't say that it was a happy-go-lucky experience to watch it. But it was an experience that taught me something and taught me something important. I'd like to talk a little bit about the genesis of the film. What drew you to it? How did you find out about it, and how did you decide that's the movie you wanted to make?
Well, when the two families that are in the film, the Vidoviks and the Mohats, brought a lawsuit against the school district, there were a number of articles in the paper about it. So I read those initially, and they caught my eye because it's a shocking case. But then as I dug deeper and kind of peeled back the layers of the case, it got more and more disturbing and seemed like an opportunity to not just tell the stories of these families, but by extension, a broader story about bullying, teen suicide, and a problem that's kind of going on across the country.
Could you give kind of an overview of what happened in Mentor to these two families? And really, you focus on there are more children who were affected by the situation in Mentor than that, but you focus on two in particular.
Yeah, I focus on the two families who brought a lawsuit. There were, depending on which articles you read, five or six suicides. The variation on the numbers has to do with one of the suicides was reclassified as not being a suicide, and there were kind of issues around whether people wanted those suicides to be classified as such. But the two families whose kids killed themselves had brought a lawsuit, wanted their stories told, so I felt comfortable that I wasn't re-victimizing anybody or, you know, causing pain to somebody who had already been through something difficult. And the school had just a high number of suicides and bullying, but more importantly to me, it was the reaction of the school that I found shocking, because there is bullying and suicide happening in schools across the country, but usually you see some kind of concern or reaction on the part of the school district, and I didn't see that. So,
what in terms of the you said the families were open to this. What made you think in this case that I want to do a film about bullying? I can see why you would say this is the story, the larger subject itself. Why did Why did that speak to you?
Not only just bullying, but the idea of bystander culture and the kind of idea that as a community we are all culpable in these situations. I think that bullying and other issues, we have a tendency to point a finger at like an individual and then kind of wash our hands of the problem. And I see most problems, and certainly this problem, as being systemic and being something that needs to be addressed by an entire community. And so the separation of like other, to say these people are not part of our community, is something that I see as a big problem.
Yeah, the ostracizing of and could you give us a thumbnail profiles of the two young people who are sort of the central tragedies in the film?
Yes, Ljana Vidovic is from a Croatian family, and they had fled Croatia because of the war and come to America for the, you know, quote unquote American dream, which is not what they found here. And Eric Mohat was a lovely young man who sang in the choir, was artistic and creative, and, you know, 6 weeks from graduating from high school. So these were great kids, and they just didn't fit the kind of football playing mainstream idea of, I guess, what this kind of, what I keep calling a culture of conformity, demanded of them.
And we should establish that the Mentor is sort of an eastern suburb of Cleveland. It's a probably going to get myself in trouble using this term, but it's a white flight community for Cleveland primarily, right?
Yeah, and I'll probably also get in trouble, but but it seems ironic to me that it's nestled right between Painesville and Chagrin, Ohio. I'm like, who's naming these places, you know?
Now, you said you read the news stories. How did you find the news stories?
The producers of the executive producers of the film, Todd and Jed Wider, had brought those articles to my attention
and said, you know, this is something you ought to take a look at.
We looked at a number of different newspaper articles, different cases in different schools, some of which I felt were not appropriate to make a film of, because I didn't know who you put on camera without that risk that I mentioned before.
Well, and it sounds like this was not an effortless production. I mean,
this was not an effortless
production. One of the things that came out of watching it was at some level the institutional resistance just to having the story told. I mean, you use effectively almost like a motif, so-and-so connected with the school system or in the power structure declined an interview, and you use the same language over and over again. Instead of having talking heads, there are times you have to extrapolate from the documents and all of that. What was the reaction when the folks in Mentor found out that you wanted to do a movie like this?
Well, initially they found out because we created a trailer for the film because we had run out of financing. Mm-hmm. And when that trailer went up, which if you see the trailer, it's 2.5 minutes. It's both parents talking, grieving the loss of their children. You know, I received hundreds of tweets and emails and threatening messages. So they all started bullying me, which was fascinating to me because it kind of defeats their own argument that there isn't a problem in Mentor anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, you really can't legally threaten somebody's life on Twitter or on, you know, by email. I also received a lot of emails that from people who wanted to remain anonymous, that they were being bullied and what was happening to them. So it was disturbing, but it was also helpful in terms of whether I had any doubt that there was a problem there. At that time, because we were still filming, you know, I answered all of them, every single one. And I said, you know, do you want to be on camera and say this on camera? And nobody would do it. So I think there's like a safety behind that kind of computer screen distance. Then when the film came out, which was only last month, that all happened again. Mm-hmm. Those, I didn't answer all of those because the film is completed and yeah. You know. my sense. I do answer the ones, of course, from people who email me that they are having problems there. But the kind of we're going to come find you tweets
stuff.
I don't need to answer it anymore.
We are talking about bullying and the film Mentor, which is about Mentor, Ohio, and focuses on the consequences of bullying. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. We get a taste of the flavor of sort of the community resistance to that. We're going to play an audio track from the film. It's a clip really about one of the sets of parents talking about sort of the mentor mindset. Could you set it up a little bit, Alex, and talk about who these folks are in the first place who are talking? And then
is this the Mohats?
Yes.
So this is the parents of Eric Mohat, and I'm not, they, you know, they say in the film what I think is correct, which is that there needs to be a financial threat to the school for there to be some change. And I think they're going to talk about something else in this clip.
I almost thought, okay, they're saying, you know, if you disrupt the idea that this is a monkey song, it's not another Pleasant Valley Sunday here.
Correct.
It's, yeah. So we'll listen to that clip right now from the film Mentor.
The really scary thing here is that the lack of support that we've seen from the community and the amount of apathy that we've run into, we believe, now this is an opinion that Jan and I hold, that it's part of the community's attempt to make the community look good. This last year, Mentor was voted one of the top 100 communities to live in the United States. But we see lots of drug activity around here that the police don't prosecute. The school is rated excellent, but we see lots of drug activity and violence in the school that they refuse to prosecute because that would make it look like it wasn't the perfect school. We suspect strongly that the community just wants to keep property values up and the reputation of the school and the community up.
That was a clip from the film Mentor where the parents of Eric Mohat, who killed himself as a result of bullying, are talking about the reasons why the community did not want to deal with the circumstances that led to Eric's death. And I suppose it would be one thing, Marilyn Leatherman, you're an anti-bullying trainer, if we could say that what happened in Mentor was an isolated circumstance and only specific to that community. But it doesn't sound like it is.
Absolutely. I think it's every place. I think bullying takes place every place. And I just commend Alex for having the courage to produce and write this film. I think it's wonderful that she did open people's eyes as the huge problem that is taking place and the amount of pain that children are experiencing. We need to do something about it. We need to change the culture of the schools. We need to educate parents. We need to educate the teachers, the administrators, and help them understand what bullying is. We need to define it for them. I think a lot of people are confused as to what bullying actually is. And once
could start there, Marilyn, if we
sounds
could.
Good.
We need a definition of bullying. What is bullying?
All right. It is intentional. Whoever the bullier is doing it on purpose. They intend to hurt someone. It's an imbalance of power. They want to have power over the child. And one of the things is so important that people understand it's ongoing. It isn't a one-time or two-time or even three-time. It happens over and over and over again. And that's part of what I do is to educate school districts and parents and children on don't report it as bullying unless it has been something that has been occurring over and over again.
So if it's a single incident where, you know, there's a conflict between two children, even if there is, an imbalance in power or size or anything like that, or, you know, your child has a solitary bad experience, that's not necessarily bullying. It is if there has to be some repetition. There has to be a pattern.
Exactly.
Okay, and in terms of, do we have any kind of numbers on how often this occurs, or is it just, you know, one of the themes that I saw coming out of Alex is this is not something people want to talk about.
No, it isn't.
So we don't really can't track about how frequently it happens until something really awful happens, occurs.
Well, Senate Bill 1423 was passed a year ago in Indiana, a year ago last July. And it is responsibility of the schools in Indiana to report it. So we should be able to track the numbers in that way.
We are talking about bullying and the film Mentor, which is about bullying, here on No Limits. My guests are the film's producer and director, Alex Lambert, and anti-bullying trainer, Marilyn Leatherman. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about bullying today, and specifically the film Mentor, which is about the consequences of bullying in a northern Ohio town. My guests are the film's producer and director, who is also a Butler University visiting professor, Alex Lambert, and longtime educator and anti-bullying trainer, Marilyn Leatherman. Alex, one of the things that that one of the most poignant parts of your film, and I'm trying to figure out how to do this in a way that doesn't give away the power of the film when people do see it, because I presume you would rather have people see it than just have me talk about it, is though when they talk about, one of these young people, the young woman, and how, even after she had killed herself, and she kills herself as a parent myself, a particularly horrifying way, that the bullying doesn't stop there, that the young people show up even at her funeral and do everything they can to make that experience more painful for her family and her friends. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, that was certainly, for me, one of the most shocking things, just because there had been, I often hear this argument that, well, kids will be kids or kids behave this way. But I feel like at some point you would have this wake-up moment where you realized, that you'd gone too far, or you got caught up in something that you shouldn't have gotten caught up for. And so to me, when a kid commits suicide, that would certainly be that point, if nothing before it had been. And the fact that it didn't really stop or deter in any way, shape, or form the bullying, that put it on a whole nother level for me of like what's happening with these kids, where what is their mentality that they don't feel that this changes how they think or how they act.
Well, and one of the classic justifications, or I guess rationalizations people use, is I didn't know, or I would have done something if I had known. And part of the power of your film is you document all of the steps along the way when these kids tried to ask for help, tried to say, I'm frightened. I need somebody here to care. I'd like to play another clip from the movie where we're talking really about the tragic consequences of what happens when the system doesn't respond.
The very people that have power, the assistant principal, the superintendent, somehow just continue to ignore the cry from this family to do something about the bullying that was happening.
It was cruel, it was mean, it was constant. The school was notified about it on a repeated basis every time something major happened. and nobody did anything. And as a result, she hanged herself.
And I should say, we're not talking about, you know, mild forms of bullying here. I mean, it was verbal abuse and in some cases, you know, some fairly serious physical violence as well. I mean, one instance in which the young woman was pushed down a flight of stairs, if I understand it correctly. And there's absolutely no evidence, Alex, that anyone at the school thought that this is something they should respond to.
No, and that was, you know, what set Solitana's case apart from many bullying cases is that the family knew, the school knew. There's a long paper trail of complaining and going to the school, asking for help, looking for help any way they possibly could. And so this was a family that really did everything that they should have done and didn't get any help. And that's an unusual case. So that was another reason why it was one that I wanted to look at. And Dorothy, who you just heard speaking, mm-hmm. why she also took time to pay attention to this case in specific, because it really stood out as, you know, years of this is a problem. Our daughter has a problem. We need help with this.
Did you obviously we established before the break that school officials and no one there was willing to talk with you, and you say that in the film. Did they refuse to talk, and to the best of your knowledge, and I realize I'm asking you in some ways to crawl into someone else's head here to answer that question, did they refuse to talk to you because they were lawyered up and their counsel was telling them don't do this, or was it because they were ashamed?
I mean, I think certainly when you have an open lawsuit, I do understand that you can't discuss details of a case. But what I found was that you can make generic statements of compassion for families that lost their children. You can, you know, say something general about mm-hmm. we have concern about bullying. You know, you can't. There's all sorts of things you can say without making yourself culpable in a lawsuit. And they didn't do that. And I found that alarming. You know, obviously, I understand that there's details that they're not going to be able to talk about, but the complete and total silence and refusal to kind of address the issue at all on any level was what.
Did they try to send their lawyer out to talk with you?
No. In fact, I have a hostile voicemail. I think I still have it on my phone from their lawyer asking me how I got into the school as though I had, you know, I said I walked in the front door. I mean, I didn't do anything unusual. You know, it was, you know, he was not helpful at all and quite belligerent for no apparent reason.
And they didn't send the school system spokesperson or
anyone? There was no spokesperson. There was no, you know, this is our representative. This is what, you know, this is our blanket statement about what's going on. You know, there was none of that.
Well, and then the other question I've got is did you try to talk? Because I know from seeing the film that obviously you had the access to some of the names. Did you try to talk to either any of the kids who did the bullying or their families to see if there's any regret or remorse?
Yes, I reached out to them. I hoped that one of them would want to talk to me for that reason, to see what they felt years later. None of them would speak. And also, you know, we spent a fair amount of time just speaking to students at the school who, you know, weren't bullies, but also weren't necessarily sympathetic, you know, were somewhere in the middle of not being perpetrators but not being victims, and they also didn't want to speak on camera, but they did speak to us off camera
about the circumstances. Yeah. And one of the I'd like to get at kind of what the school system's response to this should have been, Marilyn. I mean, you know, this sounds like it's a child's nightmare to go through that. It's also a parent's nightmare mm-hmm. to think about your child having to endure something like that. So What should the school system have done? I'm presuming you have seen the film as well?
I've seen the trailer.
Okay.
I've seen the whole film.
Okay, but you've picked up from the conversation
right.
here. I mean, we're talking about some pretty egregious examples of bullying. What should the school system's response have been to
this? I think when the parent went to the school and asked for help and informed them, I would be curious to know, did they do anything at all? And they didn't speak to you, so I don't think, sounds like they didn't really respond to the parents' plea for help.
No, they didn't. And there's a lot to document that they didn't respond. Mm-hmm. So it's not just
no, and that you see that in the film.
You see that in the film.
It's probably the most effective use of a paper crawl I think I've ever seen on camera, but to show just how long the trail was on that.
My opinion is when parents contact the teacher, school administrator, superintendent, they should immediately respond in one way or another. And as a school administrator, whenever I had a report, which wasn't often because the children knew that we did not allow it in our building, but I would talk to the parents and then I would immediately talk to their child and talk to the child who was bullying that other child. And I would make it clear, if it didn't stop immediately, that we would take further action.
How do you stop a bully? I mean, that's the classic, sort of 1940s or 50s John Wayne response is you stand up to a bully. But the reality is it's rarely one. It certainly wasn't just mm-hmm. one kid tormenting another kid in this case. It was, sounds almost like Lord of the Flies here, where you've got gangs isolating other children. How do you, and I'd like to believe that, the children, even though they are doing horrible things, are just not intrinsically awful. What prompts this? That kind of behavior on their part, Marilyn?
As I meet with classrooms, I meet with classrooms, individual classrooms, for an hour. And I ask them that question, what causes it? And one of the children recently said, because they have a sad heart. And sometimes that's the case. It might be that they are unhappy. They might, for one reason or another, they might be jealous. They might see it happening at home. There's a lot of reasons why a child might be cruel to another child. Sometimes it's a way that they feel they can be popular. Other children will like them if they make fun of someone because they get attention and they laugh. And those are some of the reasons that a child might bully. However, I try to encourage the children, if they witness it, even though they might not be the bullier, if they see it happening, they might be a bystander or witness, that they do something about it. And number one, don't join in. I encourage the children, don't ever join in, because that's what they want. They want the power and they want people to join in with them. So I say, do not join in. Tell the other children not to join in. And then comfort the target. We call them the target or the person that's being bullied. Comfort them and help them to get out of that situation where they're being bullied. And then they should report it if it's something that's been ongoing. And then at some point, one-on-one, they might talk to the person who or the people who are doing the bullying and say, that's not the way to act. Think of how that child is or that your friend or that other person is feeling. And try to, I think what I do in the school systems that I work in are try to change the culture of the schools. And we try to talk a lot about kindness. Rather than say the word bully all the time, we try to use the word kindness as much as possible.
We are talking about bullying in anticipation of a special screening of the film Mentor, which is about the consequences of bullying. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Alex, we've been talking about this movie an awful lot. We haven't told people where or how they can see it. There is going to be a screening, right, next week.
Yes, on Tuesday night at 7:30.
At 7:30, okay. And it's going to be at Butler, right?
Yes.
At Clues, right?
In the arts, yes.
Yes. So, Schratt Center. I'm sorry.
Exactly, Schratt Center.
Okay. And, you know, what do you hope people will take away from seeing this film?
You know, it's interesting that you brought up the word kindness. I mean, I'm not a bullying expert, so I don't
a
lot of...
You're a storyteller.
Yeah, but what I'd like to see is for people to treat each other more kindly. I mean, for people to behave, you know, with some kind of feeling that the other people in their school or your city or your town or your workplace are your contemporaries and part of your community, and you have a responsibility for their feelings and emotions, you know.
You used a term earlier about the bystander culture, and Marilyn's alluded to that too. I mean, the other part of this is, you know, as I watched your film, there's one young man who I think at one point attempts to intervene.
Yeah, Adrian.
Yeah, on Slajana. Did I pronounce her name correctly?
You did.
I did. Slajana's, I've been worrying about that all broadcasts. Mm-hmm. Slajana's behalf, but no one else while all of this is going on. I mean, what accounts for that, Marilyn, is the fact that you see things like this and nobody steps up and says that's wrong. I'll let both of you have a shot at that one because it's a profound question.
I want to hear what you have to say, but I just wanted to say that Adrian speaks, I think, quite well about that
because when
he stood up for her,
he
got
punished.
In trouble.
He actually got punished by the school, which, you know, is a separate. But
I think it's not so separate because I think, you know, fear of I mean, you know, he ultimately was in trouble for defending her.
And I guess by separate, I meant the culpability there, at least, seems to me to be with the school system. You know,
right, but
that's a way of punishing a whistleblower, as it were.
Yeah, but there was also no, like when you mentioned the Slajana being pushed down the stairs by a football player, he was not punished. He was not suspended from a game. He was not in any way, nothing happened to him. So there is a support of the students by the adults. You know, I guess I'm saying I don't think it's all on the kids to know what to do. I think that they're learning this from adults who are punishing kids who are standing up for the victims and not punishing kids who are kicking kids downstairs and making decisions about which students are valuable and which ones aren't.
Marilyn?
Yes. I think there's a fear that comes about from the child who is being bullied and the person who is a bystander. They are afraid that if they report it or say anything, that the person who's doing the bullying or the people will bully them and make it worse. And once in a while, I'd get a call from a parent saying, my child did not want me to call you because they were afraid. I didn't even know that they were being bullied, but they have stopped eating. They're not eating properly. They don't want to go to school. Their grades are going down. So I tell the parents to watch for these signs and then report it, because the child didn't want the parent to report it because of the fear factor. But, of course, after the parent did, or whenever the parents would, I would always address it and assure the parent that if it did not stop, to call me back again and let me know.
Well, it sounds like there's also a different dynamic even beyond the fear. There's a sense of shame, too, about talking about this. You'd think the shame should be on the other side, the people who were doing the bullying, but they don't sound like they've been abashed by this experience at all. How difficult is it to get people just to talk about the experience of being bullied? Alex?
I think that's actually...
Marilyn? All right, well, we'll go.
You know what? It's when I meet with these classes one-on-one right in front of me, they do talk about it. Mm-hmm. And the thing that has been most interesting to me is at the end of the sessions, I teach them how to make proper apologies. Mm-hmm. And when they make these apologies, they're sincere. And I'll talk more about that in a minute.
We are talking about bullying and the film Mentor. My guests are Alex Lambert and anti-bullying trainer Marilyn Leatherman, if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You also can find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about the subject, the awful experience of bullying, and the film Mentor, which is about Mentor, Ohio, and almost an epidemic of bullying there that led to a series of teen suicides. My guests are filmmaker and Butler University visiting professor Alex Lambert, who is the producer and director of the film Mentor, and longtime educator and anti-bullying trainer Marilyn Leatherman. I think to get a real sense of what this was like, we need to listen to another clip from the film where we're talking about really the circumstances that led to these tragedies. So we're going to listen to a clip from the film Mentor.
People threw food at her. They were throwing food at her, and nobody did anything about it. And then, you know, even me, I didn't do anything about it the first time. And then I saw it a second time happening. And when I'd stand up for her, when I'd get in those people's faces, I would be told to sit back down because I'd be the one getting in trouble and getting suspended.
People would not stop. People would not have mercy on her at all. And it's hard to know that she tried. She tried her best to deal with it and move on, and people wouldn't let her.
She was pushed down a set of stairs. She was called all sorts of nasty names that had to do with her nationality, her accent. She had a couple moles on her face that they teased her about. It got to the point where she was teased so relentlessly that she found herself having to eat her lunch in the bathroom in a stall just to get away from all the teasing.
That was a clip from the film Mentor when we're talking about Slajana's, the circumstances that led to her suicide, the bullying. Marilyn, while that clip was playing, you were nodding your head, and now you're shaking it regretfully. What were you thinking while you were listening to that?
Honestly, myself as a student, because I was severely bullied for my whole educational experience. And I know the pain, and I remember spending a lot of time in the restroom, and I know it was being watched by teachers. I know other people, other students. No one stood up for me. And my question for myself and my question for this, the teachers at Mentor, teachers had to see this. Why didn't they do something? Why didn't they stand up for her? Why didn't they talk to the children? Maybe they did. I don't know. But that's why I'm trying to educate the schools, and I meet with all the staffs, the school districts I've been working with, and help them understand to watch for the signs, watch for this to happen. If you see it happening, do something about it.
Well, and I guess Alex, believe me, I'm not trying to relieve the school system of any responsibility or culpability here for what might have happened. I'm trying to get to that larger question of you know, moral responsibility, too, that we all see things that are wrong, and we'd like to think in our private selves that we'd be the one who would stand up and say, this is wrong. But that doesn't seem to, with the exception of Adrienne, her friend does not seem to have happened. And I'm also wondering, you know, some of this goes beyond school discipline. I mean, you push someone down a flight of stairs, you're throwing stuff at them. That meets the definite, that's criminal behavior. That meets the definition of assault. You know, was there any legal investigation of any of this stuff? Or
no, and I think that's where I think that there's a problem with what people understand bullying to be and with how these incidents are written down, because that is assault, and it is illegal. And if it gets categorized as not as such, then it doesn't get investigated as such.
We've got an email from a listener named Ken that's right on this point. And if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Ken says it often bothers me to see obvious criminal offenses referred to as bullying when it happens in a school setting or other adolescent social setting. Please discuss why, as a society, we continue to leave these criminal acts such as assault, battery, sexual harassment, etc., in the hands of the institution. Obviously, the school is responsible to provide a safe and productive environment for learning, but why are the police not involved more quickly and more often in cases of criminal offenses?
That's a two-part question, and I think very good points. So the first part I was just talking about, I think there needs to be very clear distinctions between what exactly is happening and how it gets categorized. In Slajana's case, the family did call the police. She was getting threatening phone calls. They had the police listen to those phone calls. The police said, it's just kids.
Kids being kids, I remember the quote from the film.
That's where I feel like this situation was systemic. I mean, the police were involved, the parents were involved, the school was involved. I mean, there wasn't, it was a broad kind of mutual feeling that this was something to be brushed under the rug and not paid attention to, but I strongly agree with this comment that you have to be very clear what you're talking about. A kid who's being pushed down the stairs, that's assault.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if she'd broken her neck or something like that, it's something even worse than that. Marilyn, is there a resistance on the part of schools to involve the police in something? Because the perception probably is this is not going to look good for the school.
I think there is. And then I think there's a lot of schools also that do involve the security officers to come and investigate and talk to the child and often talk to the parents. So it pretty much depends on the school system.
We are talking about bullying and the film Mentor, which is about the consequences of bullying here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Suzanne, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
And I kind of came into this part way, so please excuse us if it's been brought up, but it may be a minor point, but your guests were speaking to presenting the importance of kindness within bullying, counteract it. And one point that I think can't be overlooked is the importance of presenting, taking a stand in bullying or reporting it, or even allying yourself with someone who is reporting it, is the importance of understanding that we present this in truth. And that is that when you take a stand or you do the right thing, it's not easy. I don't even think that we can present that as, it'll feel good if you do the right thing or you'll feel good if you do acts of kindness. I think it's important to understand that it does require a bit of self-sacrifice, and it is difficult to take a stand or to do the right thing. But in the end, it is the right thing to do, and you will feel better about yourself, and you'll make the world a little bit of a better place. I think it's important, though, to present, because to mischaracterize it as a feel-good situation is not really truth. For those of us who have taken a stand, you understand that a lot of people will disappear from standing beside you, but in the end, if it's the right thing, people do see that, and it is the right thing to do. But I think it's important to point out to whether it's teens or youth or even small children that you have to be prepared to do the right thing, and that it may not feel great at first, but
yeah, doing the right thing may not be doing the right thing is not necessarily the same as doing the painless thing. Thanks very much for the call and the comment, Suzanne.
Well, thank you.
Alex, that also strikes me because there is a section, I think, when the Associated Press reporter that you interviewed as part of the film is talking about how, Eric's parents, who were sort of the first out of the gate to take a stand in regard to this, suffered it sounds like some pretty significant social ostracism because of it. Could you speak to that?
Yeah, both couples did, but the Mohats, as you say, because they brought their suit first and they lost their child first, experienced a loss of friends, a shunning by community members, people who were angry at them for bringing a lawsuit, who didn't, you know, no longer wanted to know them, or, you know, and worse, were hostile towards them.
What is the mindset? I mean, I'm trying to speak, you know, you're talking to someone who has just lost a child and you're angry somehow?
Yeah,
you're the victim in this situation rather than the grieving parent?
My feeling is whether or not you agreed with the lawsuit, whether or not you felt the school was in fault, you know, to not have compassion for parents who've lost a child is just shocking to me. And I don't understand how you could, you know, there's all sorts of things we can disagree on and still care about the fundamental grief that somebody's going through.
And Marilyn, in terms of this, because it does seem one of the keys here is to some degree empowering the Adrians, empowering the bystanders who may feel, uneasy about something that they're mm-hmm. seeing, and want to help to take a stand. And in Adrian's case, as Alex pointed out, you know, he tried to do the right thing and he got slapped down hard when that happened. So, you know, what are some practical steps in schools, but, you know, in society, ways that, and I don't just mean be embracing and supportive. I want to hear Suzanne's point there too, that we don't just respond with kindness. I mean, do we need, in effect, the equivalent of whistleblower laws for schools or something like that, so that when a kid says this is going on and it should stop, it sort of forces the hands of school officials?
Well, I think, of course, the children are often reluctant to report it because they're afraid that they might become bullied then. So what I try to encourage the classrooms and the schools to do is to be able to report the incidences anonymously. And I encourage teachers to have a reporting box in their room, and the principals at the front office a reporting box, and someone could write down what they have witnessed and put it in there. And they could put their name or not. And that way they wouldn't, the person who's doing the bullying wouldn't know that they have reported, that they're the ones that have reported it. And if a child's being bullied, they could also report it in a way that they wouldn't be seen as someone who is reporting it.
Alex, in researching this story, I mean, what do you think? What conclusions have you drawn about the way that we should attempt to combat bullying?
I mean, I am always, in general, as a filmmaker, the more I explore something, the more questions I have, rather mm-hmm. than the fewer questions
yeah.
I have.
Well, that's unfortunately, that's sort of the place thought takes you to when you think about it. Yeah.
So I don't know that I have, any easy answers. I do think it's a really complex issue that brings in, I mean, in the film we try and address mental health issues, bullying, suicide, depression, immigration, lack of diversity in this culture. You know, this is a very homogenous culture. The LGBT community, I mean, this is a very broad kind of number of things that are touched on that I think all come together to make for a complicated and difficult to solve problem.
Well, and the immigration part of that, I thought, was one of the things that just ripped at me when I watched it, was when Slojana's father said, "I've been in a war, basically. We came here to get away from war, as it were, and this is worse than war."
That's exactly what he says. I mean, said my children stayed alive during the war, and
they survived
came to
war,
America.
And they didn't survive, middle American high school, basically. Marilyn, in in working with this, is this problem of bullying worse in American culture than it is in other cultures, or is it something that is sort of endemic as part of the human experience?
I think it happens every place. But what I am suggesting that school districts do is start really in preschool, kindergarten, start very early and encourage the media specialists to order. There are many, many books out there regarding bully prevention and kindness and how to treat one another and friends. And order those books. Have teachers start very early reading those aloud to the children to encourage a discussion, a conversation regarding this topic.
We have gotten an email from a listener named Elliot. Says, obviously the school and the individual bullies hold the lion's share of responsibility, but how are the parents and the families of the bullies reacting in these cases? Are the bully and victim families in any sort of communication? Alex?
I felt that the families of the... I mean, I felt the parents were also culpable. I mean, not the parents of the kids who died.
Yeah.
But the
parents
other
of the kids who behaved badly.
And that's where I'm saying it's an entire problem of everybody because you're, you know, raising kids not to feel that... I mean, you know, this is not a behavior that I would have ever gotten away with. My parents would not have allowed
no.
this. So you know, and there is also this kind of when I hear this kids are just behaving like kids argument, it frustrates me because a 17-year-old, you know, in a month is going to be able to vote and get married and hold a job and go to war and do all sorts of adult things. So there isn't some magical overnight moment when you become an adult. You need to learn this from a younger age.
Well, and I'm also... The reason I'm pausing is I'm about to say something that likely will be interpreted as sexist, but I'm going to say it anyway. One of the other things that appalled me watching this is you have a large man pushing a woman down some stairs and nobody intervenes. I mean, I'm sorry, that is a taboo in almost any culture. You know, it's supposed to be. And the fact that you know, there weren't criminal charges, is some of it also just this kind of culture of protecting insulated people. Alex, Marilyn, either one of you?
I don't think it's sexist. I appreciate the comment.
Oh, okay.
Because you have a large, because of the difference in power and strength and dynamic, you know, I mean, nobody should push anybody down the stairs, but certainly when you have somebody stronger and bigger and more supported by the school, pushing a weak person who's complained about bullying down the stairs, this is terrible.
We are out of time. I'd like to thank you both. Please go see the film, Butler University, 7:30 next Tuesday. My guests have been Alex Lambert and Marilyn Leatherman. I'd like to thank both of them for an illuminating conversation and all of our listeners who called in. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood, and board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.